But now you're starting to see the players really understand it more. And I think there's been a really good job being done the last 3 to 5 years of the people who are in these analytics departments, you know, kind of making breakthroughs with players. And what you do when what you see when players get more information is players get smarter about their approaches.
Hello and welcome to episode 167 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at BP, and I am joined by a trio of my BP colleagues for this very special episode. We've been off for a couple of weeks, but we're getting back in the swing of things, and to do that, we've got BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer. Brett, what's going on? How are you?
I'm loving life. How are you doing, George?
Fantastic. It's going to be a good show. We have Mike Gianella from the BP Fantasy team. Mike, how are things in Mets land right now?
Well, they're losing, but I mean, you can't complain about their record, which, you know, as I'm talking to you, is what, 15-6? You have to be happy if you're a Mets fan, but Mets fans are never happy. So that's how it goes.
As long as Matt Harvey's there, I don't think you're ever going to find true happiness, as always. It's always going to be complicated.
He probably won't be around for very much longer, I suspect.
You might be right about that. And finally, we have joining us on the show today, also from the BP Fantasy team, the other half of the Fantasy Hipsters column and the Free Agent Watch, my good friend Mark Barry, friend of the pod. Mark, happy Acuna Day. How you doing?
Hey, buddy. Yeah, it's been pretty awesome watching Acuna go 1-4 thus far. And I can't imagine anything better than to cap off Acuna Day by doing a little draft action, talking about some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, according to the X stats, he should have been like 3-4. So I'm just gonna throw that out there. this is a fun time of the year. As I mentioned, we've been off a little bit longer than that Brandon Belt plate appearance where he fouled off 20 pitches or whatever. But we're getting back into things. We're gonna try and do the show every week going forward. And this is one of my favorite times of the year because we have the Stanley Cup playoffs going on. I got the Bruins Game 7 going on. They're currently losing because Tuukka Rask is terrible. We have the NFL draft coming up in prime time starting tomorrow when this podcast drops. So I thought a fun way to do the show today would be to do a draft. Basically go through each of us and pick rest of season storylines, the topics that we think matter for fantasy owners going forward. I sent out a list of about 30 to 40 names to you guys earlier tonight, so we're going to try and roll through as many of these as possible. But before we do that, a quick reminder that today's podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Fantasy Baseball. Yahoo has the best fantasy experience in the game. Get the stats and analysis you need to run your team like a big league GM with the Yahoo Fantasy app. Yahoo Fantasy has been rated number one by the FSTA for 5 years in a row. You can trade and manage your team right from your phone with the Yahoo Fantasy app. Get it today. Yahoo Fantasy Baseball, the official fantasy game of Major League Baseball. I love the Yahoo Fantasy app. I'm on it all the time. It is definitely one of the five most time-consuming things in my life right now. So let's get right into it, guys. We're going to dispense with the formalities. You know where to find us on Twitter. You know where to find us at Baseball Prospectus. Let's get into the draft. And I've decided to give the first pick to Mark because you're our guest here on the show. And I know you want to talk about Ronald Acuna, right? So let's start there.
That's probably the first pick, especially coming the day of his call-up. He's very good, and I'm excited to watch him. And the Braves' offense was sneaky really good before he gets called up, and They just look like a very good offensive team, and I'm excited to see what he adds and what they could actually be. It was a bad NL East last year, and it could be a really fun NL East this year.
So, Brett, what are your sort of immediate expectations for Acuña? Because coming into the season, obviously you're talking a five-category potential monster, power-speed combo guys, one of the most exciting fantasy prospects we've seen in a long time. But I think there is some debate about what his initial fantasy value is going to be, what sort of adjustment period fantasy owners should expect for him. So what are you expecting from Ronald Acuña going forward the rest of this season?
I expect some trials and tribulations at the start, and by the end of the season, I expect him to be right around about a 260 or so average with probably 15 to 20 homers and 20 plus steals.
That's an extremely valuable fantasy asset. I thought the one element that we're not talking about often enough, maybe we are, but I haven't seen it talked about too much, and this was a tweet Baseball Reference sent out earlier today, that Ronald Acuña at 20 years and 128 days old, there are only seven hitters who are younger than that who've debuted since 2010, and it's guys like Trout, Harper, Machado, and then some other guys who've been a little less successful, Castro, Profar, Odor, and Robles. So are we not talking enough about how young he is and how just insane the ceiling is for him long term? Is that have we not talked about that enough? Because I'm not sure. Maybe we haven't lately.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the upside almost overshadows the age, which is really weird, but because they're connected. But no, I mean, Acuña is very, very young. What he did last year was just stupid, given his age and his production level in the upper minors. And, you know, he's going to struggle making as much he's going to struggle making contact this year compared to the rest of his career. I think he'll be a solid batting average contributor long term, but I don't expect that this year. I think that he's going to get a chance to kind of just show what he can do in Atlanta. They're not going to tell him not to run. He's going to get to have some fun there.
Yeah. I mean, that lineup all of a sudden is looking extremely good when you have Dansby Swanson taking a step forward, Ozzy Albies coming in and immediately being a heart of the order guy. Freddie Freeman looks like an MVP candidate. So that's a great spot to be in, and I'm with you. I think there's going to be some variability with the batting average. There are going to be fluctuations where he's got good stretches and then stretches where he's cold and he's striking out a bunch. So I'm with you there. And Mike, are you on the same page with Acuña as far as there's going to be some variability with the batting average, but it's elite power and elite speed? Or where do you stand on Ronald Acuña coming out of the gate initially?
Yeah, I agree with Brett, and I can see the average being variable. I'm probably slightly more optimistic about it. I just see a player where, you know, in this game and the way it plays, the speed is what I'm looking at. He's going to run enough where, you know, unless he hits like 230 or 240, where there's I think there's too much talent for that to happen. You're looking at a player who is going to provide value. And, you know, honestly, I remember the big discussions about him. Some people were taking him in the sixth round of 15 team mixers. I think he could get there. I'm not saying that he will, but, you know, given the variance in drafts, you know, looking back, I think that pick was, or a pick in the sixth round where you reach for him, I'm not gonna say it was a great pick, but I think it was okay.
I think there's less risk with of a total collapse with a guy like Acuña than a lot of other prospects that we've seen.
Yeah,
I think
I mean, it could happen, but I agree that the odds of that happening are lower.
So I want to close out on this point, Mark, and I alluded to this with what I asked Brett earlier, but I think there was a little bit of concern when he started so slow out of the gate in AAA, and I don't know if I've heard this anywhere, but maybe Acuña was just bored. Like, it's not a challenge for him to go back to AAA to start the year, so maybe he wasn't, you know, destroying the baseball right out of the gate because, well, let's be honest, he should have been in the majors. So does that Do you think that as well, or where do you stand on what Acuña was doing earlier in this?
Yeah, I hadn't, to be honest with you, I hadn't really even looked at his AAA numbers until last night when he got called up, and I was trying to write the fantasy part of the call-up for BP. And it was just kind of hilarious, just because when you look at the line, it almost screams, somebody get me out of here. I yeah. have no business being here. And with everybody talking, even in spring training, like, oh, he's going to be down for 2 weeks and then he'll be up. Like, that has to weigh on you a little bit. And he finally hit his first home run, I think last week, maybe. He was still drawing walks, but he was striking out a bunch, almost like he's just selling out for power. And just, I don't know, it definitely looked like he was just biding his time until he could come up and then actually start paying attention again.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. That's enough Ronald Acuña talk. We all think he's going to be a very, very good fantasy player for a long time. Brett, I'm going to give you the next pick. Who is the player that you are targeting, that the storyline that you want to touch on, that you think matters the most for fantasy owners going forward the rest of the season?
I'm going to take one of these topics, but I'm going to take it for the purpose of talking about one number. I am going to talk about Josh Hader. I don't think Hader is going to get much in the way of save opportunities when Corey Kniebel comes back. Kniebel's very good, but one of my favorite at this time of year, I kind of like to look at some really, really fun numbers, even though they're not, you know, incredibly meaningful in a lot of respects. But Josh Hader, Josh Hader in April has thrown 58 sliders. His whiff percentage when batters swing at his slider is almost 72%. That is an obnoxious number. Obviously he's not going to sustain that, but that is like, if you have a 40-45% whiff rate on swings with a breaking ball, that's really good, and nobody is touching his slider, and he is kind of just striking everybody out because of it. And you know, I kind of look at what he's doing, and I think back to those one or two like ridiculous strikeout Brad Lidge seasons from like 13-14 years ago. I think Josh Hader might strike out 155 batters this year, which is completely insane, but they're going to let him have multi-inning outings, and he is striking out almost two batters per inning. So, you know, if you watch him, you get it, and I think he's going to be an extremely valuable middle infielder, sort of in the way that sort of like a better version of Dellin Betances when he was good.
Also, I think there's a real buying opportunity from a trade standpoint, because I think the vast majority of fantasy owners, they don't know how to properly value that type of production because he's not getting saves. It's a weird, almost unique type of role, however you want to define what he's doing coming out of the bullpen. So I think it's tough to gauge his value, and I think that makes him a pretty attractive trade piece if you're going to go out and target him. So, I mean, Mark, you know, Hader's been a little bit of a quasi-obsession for us in the Fantasy Hipsters column, because he's sort of the beacon of light that we're all trying to – the next guy like that that we're all trying to find. And I think the thing that we've sort of gravitated towards is – maybe we weren't focusing enough on how good of a pitching prospect he was coming up, and that how him moving to this type of role was going to translate, just how good his stuff was and how good of a prospect he was. So do you think maybe we kind of missed the boat on this the last, I don't know, year or so, with just looking at how good Hader was and how it was going to translate?
I don't know if we missed the boat. I think it's tough to predict anybody being this dominant, especially when they haven't been previously. I do think that kind of what we were talking about before, I know that you mentioned it when you were on your Yoni kick, just about things that you like to look at in AAA pitchers. You find some guys that are good at limiting runs, which sounds like a novel concept, while also striking some guys out, and they translate well to the bullpen. Whether he stays in the bullpen for the duration, I know that when you're this good and this young, there's always a temptation to jump back into the rotation. But we talked about him in a Hipsters column a couple weeks ago that he might be the answer to the, oh, who's this year's Chad Green, or who's 3 years ago's Andrew Miller? And we thought that Hader might be the guy just because of the opportunities that he's getting, the duration of his stints, and just that he strikes out, you know, the world, basically.
Yeah. Mike, do you have any Josh Hader? I know you've been on the Josh Hader train for a long time, so congratulations.
Yeah, I mean,
on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of shares. I just saw how good he was. I don't really have much to add. Yeah, he's an elite like strikeout machine, and I bought him in Labor NL. And you know, despite the fact, you know, Zach Steinhorn is running that team now, and despite the fact that the rest of that staff is kind of meh, and you know, Jake Arrieta like came in late, he'd have a good outing or two, that staff is still near the top. Like in only leagues, the power of Josh Hader is incredible, but even in deep mixed leagues, he's just a strong pitcher to have on your squad. And you know, if there's some weird 10 or 12 teamer where you don't have him, like in one of your reserve slots to stream in when your starter's not available, you should.
So can I ask you a valuation question here? Because I think you're the right person. I'm not going to hold you to this answer, but if you had to pick one for the rest of the season, who would you pick, Josh Hader or Craig Kimbrel?
Well, I want Kimbrel because of the saves. Just because, you know, unless you're in some form, I mean, if holds are included too, that's different. But
no,
assuming
not,
it's
not
a holds
just
league,
a standard 5x5. If you had to pick one rest of the year,
you still want Kimbrel from an evaluation standpoint, because he's gonna, you know, even if the strikeouts like are down somewhat, like right now he's about 12/9. Even if he holds there, the saves are gonna propel him, because I don't know what your over under is on Hader's saves. I just don't see him going over like, you know, 15, you know, of course, assuming, you know, Nebel comes back and is fine.
Well, I just go back to like what Mark was talking about. A couple years ago, we saw that crazy Andrew Miller season where he was earning, I think it was 24 or something like that in standard. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but is that at the end of the season, is from a valuation standpoint, is it going to be comparable to like elite closer production?
Yes, it's going to be like kind of next tier. Like if you had asked me
like
about
Brad
like
Hand a year ago, basically.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it'll probably be better than him. Like if you had asked me about a top five, like a guy who's fifth versus Hader, Hader's there. The guy I was thinking of too was like Dellin Betances the year he broke out.
Yep.
That's kind of what you're going to be looking at.
Okay, so
you're getting some, you're getting some saves with that too. So that's what you're looking at there.
Yep. All right, so Mike, you're up next. Our first two picks have been Ronald Acuna and Josh Hader, two of the more compelling fantasy storylines in fantasy baseball. And I think I know where you're going to go, Mike, but I want to see if you take this guy. So you're up. Who do you have?
I don't think you know, because I'm going to take one of a guy Brett loves, and I'm sorry, Brett, to do this. I'm going to take Kyle Schwarber.
Oh. Yeah, Mike.
I have to kind of pat Brett on the back for this one, because I have to admit, I looked at Schwarber coming in when I was putting my valuations together. I looked at that batting average. I heard all the negativity about him, and I was like, you know, I get it. Like, he's a power guy, but he's just a guy. Like, in this, you know, like aspect that we're looking at now, where everybody hits 30 home runs, and you know, there's guys that do that with better batting averages and some steals. And you know, thanks to Brett and his positivity, I dug into Schwarber. You know, what I found there is I found a hitter who was just awful in the first half of 2017. There's no, you know, way to sugarcoat that. And then when you look at his second half numbers, it was a hitter who was pretty good. And, you know, what I bought into with him was the idea of, well, if he gets 130 games, you know, gets 450, 500 plate appearances, he's going to do what he did last year, which is hit, like, you know, if you pace that out, like 35 to 40 home runs with a 250 average. The guy's a power hitter, And it's clear in retrospect that he was still recovering from what was a brutal injury in the first half, even though he did play in the World Series. But what I'm seeing from him this year is even better, which is kind of the scary thing about him. Now, I mean, he's not hitting lefties, like, and that's something that he might never do. But the nice thing about the Cubs is he's barely going to play in those situations. And as we've seen already, he has value not playing against them. A common mistake I see in fantasy is I see people look at a guy like this and go, he's not going to play against lefties. He's going to sit, so he loses some value. And it's like, well, yeah, but if he's elite against right-handers, how much does that matter? Like, you're losing some opportunities, and it's going to keep him from being like a top of the pops, like super elite player. But based on where he was drafted and, you know, based on where he went on a couple of the auctions I saw, he's going to be a bargain.
Brett Schwarber.
Yes.
The fact that he's hitting 292 right now, he's 0 for 3 tonight, but he does have a walk. Hitting 292, this isn't BABIP fueled. I think that's important to know. Like, he's a 317 BABIP, so it's not like he's running a 450 BABIP right now, and that's the reason he's hitting. He's cut down on the strikeouts. These are all really encouraging signs, and I think we were both in on Schwarber coming into the year, but I think he's sort of exceeding. Is he exceeding your expectations, or is he right about where you thought he was kind of going to be from a true talent standpoint?
I mean, given the disclaimer that I don't really expect him to be a 300 hitter, I think this is right about where I thought he was going to be. I think, you know, the slight drop in strikeout rates is encouraging, but we're still early. I mean, really, all it takes is one, like, 3 or 4 strikeout game, and then all of a sudden he's back on his career pace. So we'll give that one another couple of weeks to, you know, until we can really make some judgments there. But, you know, the one thing that's most encouraging about Schwarber is that he is just hitting the fuck out of the ball. His hard contact rate is the highest of his career so far, and he is, he is slimmed down, and he is putting every inch of that body into the ball, and it is it's a beautiful thing to watch. He's being selective. He's driving the right pitches. He's being the kind of hitter you want him to be. I think this version of him, I think I said going into the season, I thought 260 and 35 homers was pretty reasonable for him. If he just played up to his talent level, I think I might have undersold the batting average a little bit if his approach is really taking a step forward like this. But I think the batting average is a little inflated because he's kept the ball on the ground a little bit more than usual, which is going to one, help his batting average, and two, kind of hurt his power a little bit. But it's not going to hurt it that much. I mean, I don't expect him to be a 52-53% ground ball hitter the rest of the year. If he does, you're probably looking at a 25-30 home run hitter. But if he does that, he might hit 300. So I'm encouraged by the hard contact, and I'm just encouraged by his approach so far this year.
To wrap up on Schwarber, Mark, Mike did a good job articulating this, but sometimes we get caught up in narrative surrounding players, and we forget, oh, this guy's true talent level is here. This is who this guy is. And do you feel like that's something that we run into a lot with the fantasy industry? Because every week we have to write a column. We have to talk about guys. We have to talk about what's happening with them. And sometimes we get too lost in these narratives with guys like Schwarber where, all right, he's been hurt, he's struggling, and then we lose sight of the fact that this is a guy who is a really good hitter.
Oh, definitely. I think that some of the mistakes that we make, myself included, is just thinking that any of those things are static. Like, you have a true talent level, sure, but it's also just changing. In the case like a guy like Schwarber, he's always been a good hitter and he's always been patient, but he's kind of putting those two together to equal just something even better than in his initial call up. Like, so everyone's either improving or maybe taking a step back, or, you know, it's always different. And I guess that's a long-winded way to say it's hard to just rely on anything to be the same. And yeah. I just think that that's a mistake that we all fall into sometimes.
Yeah, I think this is an old Brett Sayer point where we get anchored to an idea of who a player is, and sometimes it takes a long time to change our opinion. So maybe that's starting to happen here with Schwarber a little bit. So first round is done. Mark, you are back on the clock for your next pick for the storyline that matters to fantasy owners the rest of the way.
I think that I'm going to stay with the Braves organization and take Ozzie Albies, who we kind of thought heading into the season might be a decent option for batting average, albeit maybe a little empty, and some stolen bases. And it has turned out to not be that way. He's not walking very often, but that, I guess that doesn't matter when you just hit homers all the time. And he hit a home run tonight, so he has 7 on the season. He's hitting .283, and he's interesting. Like, I know he was a trendy pick heading into the season, but he's kind of eclipsed those standards, and he's done it kind of in a different way than maybe we expected.
Yeah, I mean, we could dedicate the next hour to talking about Albies, but Mike, this goes back to something we talked about during our position preview series, that where he was being drafted, it felt like you were buying a lot of the production. You were paying for a lot of the profit up front with Albies, and his price got a little bit carried away towards the back end of draft season. But this also ties in perfectly with the guys who we didn't envision as power hitters. Because of the way the major league ball is right now, they're able to add power once they reach the big leagues. Guys with solid hit tools, all of a sudden, they're the ones benefiting from the baseball and adding a few more feet to their fly ball distance, and all of a sudden, a fly ball becomes a home run. And is that kind of what we're seeing here with Albies, where a guy with a great hit tool, and just all of a sudden, the ball changes? Here we are.
Yeah, you know, and Jarrett Sider and I were talking about this. You know, Jarrett, by the way, is, you know, BP prospect writer. If you don't follow him, you should. But we were talking about this on Twitter, and that was kind of exactly what he said. I mean, he was talking about, you take a talented hitter in Albies who, you know, in the minors, you know, we watched him. You know, he looked like a gap hitter. He looked, you know, good hitter, you know, without a doubt, but looked like a guy who was going to mostly hit doubles, you know, maybe hit like 10, 15 home runs tops. And, you know, some of it is, it's the raw talent, it's the ball, but yeah, he's also changed his swing. I mean, he's swinging differently than, you know, the couple times I saw him in AAA, you know, and Jared, who had way more looks than I did, kind of confirmed that. So it's a combination of all those factors, and it's what makes, you know, analyzing these players from a fantasy standpoint, like, really challenging, because it puts us in this position where it's tough to look and say, okay, well, you know, Ozzie Albies, he's a good hitter. We don't think he's going to hit for power. You know, now we have to make these decisions on the fly of, like, well, is he good enough to make this transformation? You know, is a talent going to rise to that level? And in some cases it does, you know, in some cases players, it's not even, I shouldn't say the talent, they just don't do that. Like, for, you know, they don't like change their approach. You know, they don't go for the elevation. And I guess I'd say in the case of someone like Albies, you know, maybe you should, or a player like that in the future, you should push up somewhat. I still will say, from a process standpoint, people who are taking him like really high, like in the sixth round, were still being aggressive. Like, it's going to pay off, of course, but I still feel like that was an aggressive play.
Yeah, it looks great when you're right, but when you're wrong, it's devastating. That was sort of our point on Albies.
I mean, the other thing to point out about him too. I mean, you know, he's hitting .274. You know, the walk rate's down from where it's been. You know, he only has one steal. I'm not trying to bury Albies. He's a great talent, and all that could come together. But, you know, he's 21 years old, and, you know, we've seen players with this profile, I don't want to say struggle, because, again, I think he's going to be really good, but we've seen players like this slip. And then the other piece of it with Albies, and again, this is like kind of small sample on top of small sample. You know, he's a switch hitter. I mean, he's murdering left-handed pitching right now coming into tonight. I know he had another home run tonight, but, you know, 20 plate appearances, 3 home runs against lefties, hitting .500. Against righties, he's got 3 home runs and 82 plate appearances. and he's hitting 213, and the slash isn't really much better. I'm not saying that that's going to continue. You know, one number should get worse, one should get better. But it's something to kind of keep in mind. Like, if Ozzie Albies is mostly murdering lefties and just kind of good against righties, some of these numbers should slip.
So, Brett, real quickly to wrap up Albies, this is more of like an evergreen process type of question, but like Mike was talking about, where it's difficult to assess future value on guys when we don't know what the power grade, where they're ultimately going to end up power-wise. How do you deal with that challenge? Because you put together the 101 with Ben Carsley, our colleague at BP, every offseason, and has it gotten more challenging for you guys to look at a player and say, well, I think he's a mid-teens home run guy versus, you know, am I able to bake in more power now? Or how do you deal with that challenge from a more broad standpoint when you're analyzing these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge, one, because generally the offensive environment. But I think more generally, it's also a challenge because of the era of information that we're in. Mm-hmm. You know, we were 10 years ago, we were sort of the fan and the fantasy analyst and the front office analytics department were sort of into the advanced stats, and we're starting to understand this stuff more. But now you're starting to see the players really understand it more. And I think there's been a really good job being done the last 3 to 5 years of the people who are in these analytics departments, you know, kind of making breakthroughs with players. And what you do when what you see when players get more information is players get smarter about their approaches, and they start to make noticeable changes sometimes, and changes that may not necessarily be predictable in the ways that we're used to being able to predict performance. So I think the combination of those two things, I think, makes predicting talent level, I don't think it makes predicting talent level that much harder, but it makes predicting end line production a little harder, which sounds strange, but it shows itself in some of these players that we've seen come up, and some of these guys hit for more power than we think, and some it's not that we were doing such a great job before and have gotten worse at it. I think players are better equipped to get better and change a little bit, which is really fascinating.
That's a really great point. I mean, the coaching also at the major league level, the communication between, like you said, the analytics and the actual dugout. Maybe a guy wasn't getting a certain that type of information at the lower rungs of the minors, where, hey, maybe you should throw this pitch more, throw this pitch less, try hitting more fly balls here. That's a really good point. I think it's back to you for your next pick, and I'm fascinated to see where you're going to go with this one.
It's back to me?
Yes, it's back to you, I believe.
All right. I'll before I pick, I'm going to spend 10 seconds just saying that I'm certainly curious to watch Albies over the course of the rest of the season, but this just kind of smells a little bit like 2005 Brian Roberts to me.
haven't heard that name in a while.
Wow.
Yeah. Brian, for those of you that don't remember, Brian Roberts was the second baseman for the Orioles, played in a really nice park for power, had, like 4 or 5 home runs for 2 consecutive seasons, and came out and hit 8 home runs in April 2005, and everyone was kind of going nuts, being like, because he was a base stealer. They were like, he's going to be a 30-30 guy. This is going to be awesome. And then he hit 3 home runs in May, 2 in June, 3 in July, 2 in August. He finished with 18 home runs. Mm-hmm. Not bad, but looking at Albies and assuming that he's going to get to 25-30 home runs, I think is super dangerous right now.
That's an incredible pull, by the way, because I'm looking at his splits, and yeah, 8 home runs in 110 plate appearances in March, April. I don't know if they played in March that year, and 10 steals and a 379 average. Wow.
Oh, he was unreal.
Good. Yeah, I think we all think of Brian Roberts as the old injured version, but yeah, for a time he was pretty incredible. Brett, who you got? What's your next pick?
I'm gonna do a quickie on Xander Bogaerts. He's gonna come back on Friday from his DL stint, but watch out. He's not hitting ground balls anymore, at least not to the extent that he was. And the more line drives and fly balls he hits, the better his batting average and power are gonna be. I think this is gonna be the huge season that we've been waiting from him, and I'm very excited. I've been excited about this for a while, and this is happening. So get on board.
It's almost like slugging 7-Eleven is a good thing, right? Like that.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. No, this is weird because Xander Bogaerts, just really quickly, Mark, he's a guy who he's changed as a hitter. It feels like so many times he's been so many different versions of Xander Bogaerts, but we always knew that this guy existed. This guy who could hit for elite type of power. This guy was always in there, right?
Oh yeah. And it's also interesting that he's changed so many times and is still 25.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's crazy.
One of the things that I find, I guess to use the word again, the most interesting about Bogaerts is just his struggles have still been pretty good. And he's held up just to a crazy standard based on some of the, like his elite prospect status. And he's always been pretty good. And even when he's been bad, he's hit, you know, like last year, he hit .273. And just because it wasn't matching the 2016 season he had, it was considered a down year, even despite all the injuries and stuff. But I'm with Brett. I think Bogaerts is maybe one of, and I don't know if we'll talk about him later, but even if he's behind DD right now, he's going to be I didn't mean to mention the name and stir anything up, but even if he's behind DD right now, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he finishes the season out earning his rival's production.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about Bogaerts going forward is, can he continue to hit for elite power without sacrificing any batting average? Because it felt like he was always going to have to trade off one or the other, whether he was going to be a high average guy who didn't hit for a ton of power, but he's kind of doing both right now. So that's going to be fascinating to watch going forward. That's a good call. Mike, who do you got?
Yeah, that's too obvious. I went with somebody like doing well, so I'm going to go with someone who I have a couple shares of who hasn't worked out so far, and that's Byron Buxton. So there's a few things about Buxton, which is I do have a concern about him, which is, you know, mechanically before he went on the DL, his swing looked bad again. And it does kind of make me worry about him. Now, it's a small sample because, you know, he did go on the disabled list with a migraine. And, you know, now he's got a problem with his foot. And they apparently drilled a hole in his toenail. Which
yeah, I was going to say that I don't want to make light of it, but that sounds awful what they had
like,
to
if
do.
If you haven't seen that, like, don't like go look at that.
No.
I'm somewhat concerned about him just because, you know, of the fact that, you know, I've watched some video and he hasn't looked good in that video, but, and I'm not saying this, you know, to be the Byron Buxton apologist, I think it's kind of easy to forget how, so every year there's been a progression with him. Like in 2016, he had a bad half and then he picked it up, you know, he didn't really run so much. And then in 2017, he had a bad month or a month and a half. And, you know, I don't want to pick the arbitrary endpoint out from 2017, but after that, he was, you know, pretty damn good. You know, we know he's never going to hit like 300. He's not going to be that guy, but he does enough in power and he's got elite speed that if he can bring that all together, he's still going to be an asset. You know, my thing about Buxton is that there's a good chance if you took him in a mixer that he's going to be a disappointment. And I know this advice is worthless because if you have him, you know, unless you're in a 10-team mix, you can't drop him. Like, you have to hang on. But what I'm saying is don't look at him like a complete failure. you know, he's barely, you know, played any games. He should be back in a few days, even with the worst case with that toe injury. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about the Twins is because of all of the weather and postponements they've had, you have the benefit with Buxton that you're not really going to miss as many games with him as you would have missed if all those games have been played. So there's a big chunk of schedule coming for the Twins and some doubleheaders. And yeah, he might sit, you know, and some of those on the first half or the second half. I just think there's too much value here with him that even if he's only, you know, like a 240 hitter and you know, only like a 15 home run guy as opposed to like a 2025, which I saw some people project, I just think he's too good of a player. And the other piece with him too is that his defense, you know, we know this about him, his defense is going to keep him in the lineup unless he's hitting like 150, which he's not going to do.
So I just had the experience of pulling up a leaderboard and there's Mike Trout and you just go, holy crap, like his numbers are just nuts. Like no matter what, it's just insane. So I'm looking at the stolen base leaderboard right now. Trey Turner and D. Gordon each have 9. There's one other player with 9. Can you name that? Can any of you name that player?
Oh, I can.
I think I know who it is.
All right, who is it, Brett?
That would be Michael Taylor.
It is. Who's currently has a .289 on base percentage in 90 plate appearances, but he's running, which is interesting. Tim Anderson has 8, by the way. Very nice. Good work, Tim. Mark, it's back to you. I understand it's you're up. Who you got?
Yeah, there's some late breaking news running across. I am actually trading this pick for future considerations to you, so you can talk about your boy Christian Villanueva.
Oh, Bill Belichick has traded up into the second round, as he is known to do. Villanueva is kind of a fascinating case. We wrote about him for the Free Agent Watch on Friday. I think we've written about him twice so far in 4 weeks on the Free Agent Watch. So he's been a
frequent guest.
Yeah, he's a frequent flyer. And I think it's fascinating because he's another example of a guy who was sort of the shruggy face emoji, sort of out of nowhere guy that all of a sudden has fantasy value. And there are clear flaws in what he's doing. And I feel like we did this last year with Chris Taylor, where it was like, look, there are some problems and some holes in the profile. And the biggest one fantasy wise for Villanueva is he doesn't run. There's no speed. He's not going to give you any steals. So there's a lot more risk with him than some of the other guys in the past that I've kind of gotten into early. And I just think he's fascinating because the batted ball profile is it's like straight out of the Justin Turner playbook. He's hitting the ball in the air with his fly ball rate over 50% of the time. And he's crushing lefties right now. And he's going to have to figure out how to survive against right-handed pitching to get enough playing time to really matter in shallow mixers. He still strikes out a ton. That's a huge problem. But I think he's interesting, and I don't know. He's a guy I think is going to end up matter. Like what Mike was saying earlier about Schwarber, where if they can just put him in exclusively against lefties, like he's going to mash, and he's not going to hurt you so much by being exposed to righties. So I like Villanueva. We've written about him a bunch, and I think people still don't know what to do with him, so there's sort of a buying opportunity here, whether you're going to pick him up or trade for him. I think that exists, so... Anybody have any Villanueva thoughts? We don't have to go too deep on him, but I think he's interesting. He's not Franchy Cordero interesting, but he's right. Interesting.
So, you know, it's funny. I picked him up in Tout Wars, I think 2 days before his 3-home run game, just because I had a complete dead spot at third base, and he was the only guy out there with like any kind of, it was him or Sandoval, and I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm gonna get with Pablo Sandoval. Villanueva is like behind a guy in Chase Headley who, you know, isn't really that great. You know, he might get some playing time. I obviously didn't expect this, but the more I look at his profile, the average is going to drop. Like there's no doubt about that. And he's going to have some, you know, games that are just kind of ugly, but there's enough in this profile where I could see him hitting about 240, 250 and exceeding, you know, all the power projections I see. The power is what I like. And, you know, what I also like about him, I've watched enough of him. I've watched two or three games where he's not just a hacker. Like, he's not Matt Davidson. He's not just kind of swinging at everything. Yeah. He doesn't have a bad approach. The approach is good enough that I think he could hit for that average and kind of provide that power where you're like, okay, like this is a solid, deeper mix player. And, you know, maybe even somebody in a 12-team mixer who, you know, if he's my corner and I can take the average hit or I can make that up elsewhere, he could be playable.
So I'm not a huge X stats guy, but if you just go to Baseball Savant and sort expected weighted on base average by hitters with at least 70 plate appearances, Villanueva is 10th right now at 455. So, like, he's up there among guys like Freeman, Hoskins, Bryant, Trout, Harper, Judge, Betts. Like, it's it's hard to fake it and be ranked among those guys for too long. So, yeah, I don't think the batting average is totally real, but I think he hits the crap out of the ball, and he could matter this year. So I definitely would rather be early and be wrong than watch him have a nice season. So
he's hitting 480 with 6 home runs against lefties. Just stupid. Throwing that out there.
It's dumb. Don't pitch to him if you're left-handed. It's a terrible idea.
What's funny about him too, you know, I brought this up with Albies the other way, is that someone brought that up to me, like, they brought up his strikeout rate against righties. Mm. And, you know, so I looked at his splits, and, you know, the funny thing is against righties, he hasn't been great, obviously, but he's been an above average hitter against righties too. And the strikeout walk rates are comparable. So, you know, he's not going to hit against righties the same way he does against lefties, but I think he can hold his own. Like, I think he could be – I hate to make this comp because this guy fell apart, but he could be like that version of Tommy Joseph when he first came up, where there's enough power and, like, everything else just sort of holds together, where you're like, all right, well, you know, regardless of what happens in the future, he could have a pretty solid season.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And if he does make some adjustments against righties, all of a sudden he's looking a lot more attractive as a long-term fantasy play. So,
right.
All right, Brett, it's back to you, unless you have any burning Villanueva thoughts. It's your pick.
I do not.
Okay, good. I wouldn't imagine. He's not your kind of guy.
I don't dislike him. You know,
I know what
he's
you
not
mean.
My...
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's talk about Gerrit Cole.
Oh, yes.
I'm extremely excited about Gerrit Cole. You know, the strikeout numbers are really coming through. His approach is changing. This has all kind of been talked about, but I want to talk about this in the context of what happens the rest of the year. I think Gerrit Cole is a top 10 starter at this point, and I think he needs to be treated as such. I don't think he's quite up with the elite, because I think some of this stuff is going to balance itself out. I think he's going to his BABIP's going to normalize a little bit. I think he's going to probably still give up a couple home runs, especially because he's throwing his four seamer up in the zone a little bit more. But, you know, overall, the strikeouts are the big thing. I mean, I think we could finally be looking at the, you know, that 250 strikeout season out of Gerrit Cole that we've kind of been waiting for, and everything else should be good enough for him to fall in line as a reliable SP1.
Mike, where does Cole end up end of season? Because I think we talked about him in the last podcast we did a couple weeks ago, and all he's done is continue to pitch well since that point, like strike out 10 guys per start. And there was a really good discussion on the last episode of Tino, by the way. I do want to plug that. You guys, Craig and Ben and Brett, you guys talked about him for several minutes, and I thought it was really good discussion of the changes he's made and how that's helping him take a step forward. So, Mike, where do you see Cole ending up when we get towards the end of the season? Because I think Brett's right. He's squarely an SP1, but how high could he be in the end of season rankings?
Well, I mean, he could be at top 10. I'm going to say top 15 just because, you know, just to be conservative on him, the strikeout rate should drop, somewhat, but he should have the highest strikeout rate of his career if he holds his mechanical adjustments. I mean, you can't predict wins, but he's on a good team, so those should come too. You could see a version of his 2015 season with more wins, and that could make him a top 10, but I'll play it safe and say top 15.
So just to stay on the Astros for a second, Mark, you and I have been talking about this guy all year, but Charlie Morton, I think, Mike, you and I were texting about him too. Like, this Charlie Morton thing is fascinating. Like, I didn't think he was going to be this durable. I thought, all right, he did it for a whole year. He was pretty healthy last season. He looked good. But he's like, the velocity's still there. He's been so good. His last start wasn't perfect. He ran into some trouble against a good Angels lineup. But Mark, like, Charlie Morton, this story is fascinating. I didn't think he was going to continue to be this good. I didn't think it was possible, really.
Yeah, it's tough when you have probably, I haven't dug into Charlie Morton's career numbers, but I would imagine having his best season at age 33 and then returning for his age 34 season and being even better so far. I didn't see this at all either. Like Brett mentioned with Gerrit Cole, I think his BABIP and kind of strand rates will regress a little bit, so he won't be a sub 2 ERA guy all season.
His strand rate is 95.1% right now.
Yeah, that might not hold, but he's gonna be really good. And it's interesting, I think we talked about him in a hipsters column, how he's really turned himself into one of the better pitchers in the league, which seems a crazy thing to think about or to even say out loud. Yeah. If you were to even go back 2 years ago, he's throwing tons of ground balls. He's striking tons of guys out. And like you mentioned before, the most important thing is he's healthy and he's pitching.
Yeah, 60% ground ball rate, almost 11 strikeouts per nine. The command, the control, it doesn't almost matter if you walk three guys per nine with that type of swing and miss stuff and ground ball rate. So, yeah, Charlie Morton, if once again, another sort of buying opportunity if someone's hesitant on him. I just didn't think he'd be able to keep doing this. It's sort of like Rich Hill a few years ago when all of a sudden he was just an elite starting pitcher out of nowhere almost. So, It's time to start buying on Morton from a staying power perspective, I think. Mike, I think it's back to you for another pick.
So I want to talk about somebody. You know, this is kind of funny that you included him here, and it's somebody I didn't like coming in, or I thought people were too high on. So Luis Castillo. Now,
yeah.
I have no shares of him, so I have no vested interest in this, but the note on your programming notes, you wrote Luis Castillo is bad.
No. Now you're going to start a thing. I didn't. Did I say that?
Can I edit it a little bit?
Yeah, no. I will stand by the statement. Luis Castillo is bad right now.
Is that what you meant by the ellipses? The ellipses were supposed to infer that means right now.
Yeah, he okay. Hasn't been great. Like, just look.
His numbers are terrible.
ERA is over six. He's not striking out a batter per nine. His control hasn't been good. I realize it's 27 innings, but if you drafted him as a top 100 pick, like, you're not getting that type of production back right now. That's all.
Yeah. Well, so my thing about Castillo is this, which is, yes, he has been bad in terms of his numbers, and there's no way around that. And I guess I kind of go through this whole thing with him. I don't know if you included him or not on here, but I want to mention someone who I was high on, and you didn't include him on here, who was bad before today, and that's John Gray.
Yeah.
So I was a big Gray guy, and, you know, Gray, I think, was going about 60 or 70 slots behind Castillo in ADP. I don't have it in front of me. You know, I know we kind of move away from that as we get into the season, but this is kind of the thing about pitching, which is unless you're talking about one of those like elite pitchers, and I'm talking about a top 5 or 10 guy, they're always going to go through stretches like this where they're bad or they're mediocre. And this really has less to do with Castillo, and it has more to do with that. What kind of annoyed me about Castillo coming into the season, so many people were certain about him. Mm. Like like some of the same people who are high on Albies and are doing victory laps right now. And, you know, if you listen to this, you know, I'm subtweeting you on a podcast. They were doing the same victory laps on Castillo. And this isn't to say that Luis Castillo can't get it back together. He is a really talented pitcher.
Yeah.
When he's on, he's got great stuff. Like, I saw him when I went to Arizona and, you know, in spring training. And I actually moved my price up on him a little bit because I'm like, you know what? This is a pitcher who, when everything's going for him, the stuff is unhittable. But we know the deal with pitchers like this, which is he's a young guy. What do you have last year? Like 86 major league innings? I'm looking it up now.
Yeah, 89.
Oh, I was close.
You were right there. Yep.
All right, so 89 innings with him, and yeah, he was great in those 89 innings. But we know the deal. Like we know that a pitcher the second time around can struggle. He can have issues with command. You know, he can miss location, and that's kind of what we're seeing right now. That isn't to say he won't get better, and I'm not a buy low, sell high kind of guy, but if you have somebody in your league who's like, yeah, I'm sick of Luis Castillo, I'll trade anything for him, yeah, scoop him up. Or if he gets dropped, like, scoop him up. But there's risk there. I guess that's all I'm saying with someone like Castillo.
You hit on the inherent point. This, we had Rob Silver on for the position previous years, and he's maybe the reason I phrased it that way on the outline, but because he's been pretty vocal about this Castillo point that he's not going to return that type of value where you drafted him. And his point was, well, the difference between Castillo and a guy you can get 100 picks later, whether it's, you know, John Gray or Jameson Taillon, or even going later, look at how well Rick Porcello's pitched this year. Like, you can find value with pitching late. Whereas you don't need to necessarily pay the premium for a guy like Castillo, even if you think he's a sure thing. He is until he isn't, right? That's the problem. Like, Kenley Jansen is the best closer in baseball until he's not. You just don't know sometimes. So I think we fall into these traps of thinking guys are safe.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I do think the difference with a Jansen or someone like that is
track
that
record,
that's it. There's enough of a track record, or was with a Jansen. Look, if you buy a Jansen, or, you know, you can go off these players in the first couple rounds. If you buy a player with a track record and he blows up, okay. Like, you got the guy with the track record. He didn't do it this year. You lost. Like, the difference, like, when I look at a Castillo, you know, Castillo's final ADP was 85 overall.
Yeah, that's high.
that's I didn't even realize it was that high, because that's how little I kind of looked.
That's NFBC, right?
Or that's NFBC, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, some of the guys behind him, and I guess some of this, which is funny, is just pitchers. So you had Masahiro Tanaka, who hasn't done well so far. You had David Price. You had Jake Arrieta, which, you know, some of that, of course, was the uncertainty with the team. You had Luke Weaver. I think what's funny about this, as much as I'm maligning Castillo, some of this conversation is that pitching is far more uncertain than we think. Like, there's really a gap with, like, where some of these guys fall in, and, you know, how that shakes out. Like, yeah, Gerrit Cole went 75th overall, which we were just talking about him. That looks great. But even so, I don't think we thought there, even if we thought there was a greater gap between Cole and Castillo than 10 slots, like I certainly did, I don't think anybody would look at Gerrit Cole like, oh yeah, like he's a top, or he's a fourth or fifth round pick, and he's being completely undervalued.
Yeah, I think the better example would have been if I had mentioned James Paxton from 2 years ago, like that kind of guy. Like, if without the tracker, like we could have been wrong on him pretty easily. Like, that wouldn't have been surprising at all. So, all right,
you guys can't tell, but I've been doing the eyes emoji this whole time when you started doing shots at Castillo.
Were you a Castillo guy?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Well,
I resigned myself to the fact, like, I liked him, especially at the tail end of last year, but I resigned myself in the fact that he was just going to be way gone by the time I'd be willing to take him this year. So,
well,
I have zero shares.
That's pretty common. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were you were in on our preseason like tier discussions, and something that surprised me, like, so I send those out, and, you know, Mark, you know, I make some calls with those, and I always expect pushback on certain players. Like, I'll make a call And I know that like people will come back and say, hey, like this guy's too low, this guy's too high. I had Castillo, like, you know, it's a 5-star tier rating for the rare listener who doesn't, like, you know, follow us before the season. I had Castillo in the 3-star tier out of 5 stars. I thought there'd be some pushback. I thought at least one person would come back and say, hey, I get it. Like, you know, he's only pitched like 89 innings. Like, he, you know, we don't know much about him, but come on, Mike, like, put him in the 4-star. But nobody at BP did that. Like everyone on staff, at least publicly, and you guys are all pretty like robust. Like nobody, I don't think there's a wallflower in the group. Nobody pushed back on that, which I thought was kind of telling. Like no one said, yeah, like you got to draft him or buy him higher because of his potential.
I mean, we try and encourage people to disagree with us whenever we're doing sort of a group project. Like, so it's not just like a bubble where we're all aligned. There's no hive mind thinking that. I mean, but yeah, that's a good point that no one.
Yeah, there's a lot of disagreement. Like people will, like if you're way off on a guy, people or they think you are, people will slag you.
Back to the top of the draft here, Mark. You're up. We're gonna do one more pick each, and then we'll wrap up because we don't want to go too long, but. There's still a ton of guys to talk about here. So, Mark, who you got? Who's your next pick?
This we can talk about this quickly and then just move on just as quickly. But I wanted to just say it's crazy to me how it almost seems like we take for granted how good Mike Trout is. Mm. Like he's consensus number one pick all the time. But somehow he's just keeps getting better, and it just boggles my mind. So that's all I got.
His numbers are stupid. He's got 10 home runs and 5 steals already.
I think it's almost like he knew that some people were getting too cute and taking Jose Altuve over him this year.
Yeah, but Brett, the analytics say that Mookie Betts is better. I mean, you have to admit that, right? That's that's obvious to anyone who. No, can we talk about Mookie Betts for 1 second? Because I mean, if Mike Trout doesn't exist, he's winning the MVP award this season, potentially, I think. He hit 2 more home runs tonight.
Well, it's April.
Yeah, true. But he had two more home runs tonight. We're recording this on Wednesday night, the 25th of April. He had 2 home runs. He's up to 8 now in the season. He's hitting .350. He's walked more than he's struck out. This could be an incredible season here from Mookie Betts. I mean, if you go by expected weighted on base percentage, expected WOBA, he's at .539. Nobody is above .489. So he's having maybe the best stretch of his career at this point. And like, would it be shocking if like by the end of the year, it's clear like Trout and Betts are the 1 and 2 guys in fantasy, or am I getting carried away here with Betts?
Look at you forgetting about D.D. Gregorius.
Oh, damn it, no. No, no, no. We're not doing D.D. Gregorius. God damn it. No, but Mookie Betts, like, is this peak Mookie, I guess, is my question.
I think this is peak Mookie from a baseball standpoint. I don't, you know, I wonder how much he's going to run, and that kind of begs the question of, you know, whether this is really peak Mookie from a fantasy standpoint. But he's ridiculous. He's really good.
I think the move back to leadoff, people maybe weren't talking about that enough because he loves to hit leadoff. It's his thing.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason he's not running is, I know this sounds stupid, but you know, he's hitting so many home runs. Like if he goes through a month where he only hits like 4 home runs, which I'm sure will happen, and gets, you know, a single or walks, I think he'll run. I don't think he's not running because he doesn't, you know, can't. I just think a lot of it is there have been a ton of extra base hits.
He's sort of like that guy where if he wanted to steal a base, he could steal the base. Like he knows he can do it, like at any time. I don't think it's like
that's like the old Mickey Mantle story, right, which I'm sure you've heard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he needs to go out and steal 30 bases. I mean, if he wants to, he'll do it. Good point. I like those two guys are insane. And there are so many other guys who are just having incredible years. Like Aaron Judge is, we were talking about him before we started tonight. Like he's unbelievable. He's getting on base about half the time. Chris Bryant, Rhys Hoskins, Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper. just go up and down the list. Like, is a fun time for hitters in fantasy. So Brett, you get one more pick here. What's your final storyline you want to hit on before we get out of here?
I'm gonna go off the board, and I'm gonna go back to just talking about just a number I think is really fun at this point. Not that I think this player is worth harping on all that much, but I'm gonna give you a series of numbers, and I want to see if anyone can guess what this is. So, 43.4%, 50.1%, 53.4%, 53.4%, 62.7%, 72.1%.
Is it? I feel like I'm in what's that movie with Nicolas Cage? National Treasure, where you have to figure out.
Nobody saw that movie, George.
What am I thinking of? No, it's the one with Tom Hanks.
Castaway?
No.
Da Vinci Code?
Yes, there it is.
Philadelphia?
No, Da Vinci Code. He has the thing, the trinket with all the Fibonacci sequences. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what these numbers are.
George made a cultural reference that I don't like. I don't get. Like, I feel like we're in the vortex here.
God damn it.
We are. We're beyond the pale.
I mean, I know what the Da Vinci Code is, but I've never read the book or seen the movie.
I'm a stupid millennial, Mike. What can I say? Does anyone have a guess, or are we going to let Brett tell us what those numbers are? Because I couldn't even write them down fast enough.
It's Brett, basically a gradual climb from 43% to 72%.
All right, tell us what does it mean? Put it all together.
This is Ian Desmond's ground ball rate.
Oh damn it! I could have got that one.
Ian Desmond has a 72% ground ball rate. You know, if you haven't heard, Coors Field is a nice place for power, but you kind of have to hit the ball in the air for that to matter. Yeah.
I tweeted that at someone a couple weeks ago. I was like, you realize his ground ball rate is like over 60% right now? I mean, it's nuts. Yeah.
So he's basically squaring off against the best version of Dallas Keuchel every single time he steps up to the plate.
Basically, yeah.
He's killing a lot of worms. It is not a great time in Colorado.
At least there aren't a lot of worms at that altitude anyway, so.
All right, Mike, you're up for your final pick of the draft. We're closing things out here.
You blew my mind on that ground ball rate thing, though.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that is really bananas. Well, I was looking at the next. Yeah, Eric Hosmer's next at like 63%, and like even within the vagaries of sample size, that's a crazy stat. I'm going to talk about this guy because we talked about him before the show, and I know this is a wow, I can't believe how good he's been. But Aaron Judge, I got to say it. I'll just make the caveat here. Like he was a – we had the long-term guys to avoid going into 2017, and he was my guy. Like I kind of looked at what he did in 2016 in the majors. I looked at his minor league numbers in 2016. I looked at his age, and I'm like, you know what? Like I just don't see it here. I don't see how, Aaron Judge is going to be this like special player. And yeah, I get it. Like I get that he exceeded everybody's expectations, but I was completely off base. And what we're seeing now with him this year, which is kind of funny. So he has 7 home runs, and I know that. If you think about that in the context of baseball and how it is now, you think, well, 7 home runs, it's not a big deal. We just mentioned Mike Trout. He's got 10. But that's kind of where we're at with Judge. Like, so he's on pace to hit in the upper 40s in home runs. He's hitting 340. That certainly won't keep up. But he's still walking a ton. He's got a great approach. And if you watch pitchers pitch to him, like there's a whole section of the strike zone they just don't want to hit, and Aaron Judge is doing what really good hitters do, which is he's like, all right, you're not going to throw me pitches, or you're going to throw stuff out of the zone. I'll take the walk because there are enough hitters in this lineup where you're going to get hurt. If it's not me hurting you, someone else will. So he's going to get his dingers, and I think some of the projections that we saw about him coming into the season where people were looking at like 35 home runs, that looks pretty conservative to me, given that park, given that lineup, and given what I'm seeing out of Judge. I'm not saying he'll do what he did last year and hit 52 home runs, but 40 to 45 with a really good batting average or a solid average is not going to be a surprise.
You've made the point many times, Mike, that fantasy owners just in general, we have a difficult time assessing the impact of batting average, and that's where I think this is really going to make a difference with Judge. He's 108 plate appearances after tonight. He's walked 22 times. He's only struck out 27 times. So
this is the other thing. Well, the one thing about his average, I'll say, is a caveat. I mean, the BABIP's high, so that's going to drop. You know, he's not going to have a BABIP over 400.
Yeah, but it might be 370. you know what I mean?
360 or so. But my thing about Judge, it's more less of a point about Judge and more of a general point. And I brought up me being negative about him. Too many analysts and too many fantasy players hold on to their perceptions. They hold on to that early idea of I was down on this guy, I was up on this guy. And you really have to let go. And I'm at the point with Judge, regardless of how the statistical profile plays out, he's going to be a really good fantasy player.
He has a .481 on base percentage right now.
So you're saying he's basically like the opposite of Cam Bedrosian?
Oh, man. Wow.
He got a save last night, by the way, and I immediately thought of you. I was like, oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, I picked him up in an AL only, got a save, so,
yeah. Oh, man. No, we were talking about Judge before the show, just like how incredible he's been this year. And man, I'm running out of things to say. He's just unbelievable at this point. All right, anybody have any final thoughts? Mike, I'm surprised I have some thoughts on your guys' selections. Mike, I'm surprised you didn't take Javi Baez, who's been fascinating this year, I think.
We could do a whole, like, I always think about Baez, and I always think about that podcast, Brett, that you, me, and Mao did, like, in 2015, where I was, like, the low guy on the totem pole on him. We argued for, like, 20 minutes, and he kind of did, like, I think my argument at that podcast was that, yeah, I really like Baez, but it's going to take a couple of years. And that's kind of what happened. Like, he's at that point now where, yeah, he's not going to do what he's doing, but he is that player. Like, he's really good. And a couple of BP or BP Chicago guys have written about him. I think Zach, and I'm feel bad, Zach, that I'm blanking on your last name, but
Zach Moselier.
Yeah, Zach Moser wrote a great piece about him today at BP Wrigleyville that really dives into the analysis on him and why he's better.
Also, we need a better term than this is the Javi Baez breakout, because, like, he's an established player. I don't know, maybe that's my nitpick about fantasy lexicon, but, like, we can't say everyone's a breakout all the time.
It's not a breakout. It's right. Just a level up.
Yes, exactly. Right. Like, he leveled up.
There you go. That's your term.
I like it. All right. I'm on board
with
that.
We're stealing that for hipsters in, like, 2 weeks, just so you know. We'll give you credit.
Yanni Chirinos has leveled up.
If you were really hipsters, you wouldn't give me credit.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we might just take it. Mark, I'm surprised you didn't take Didi Gregorius just to spite me and make me talk about him. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Nice. He's work, just buddy. So good. I mean, what else can you say about the best player in baseball?
Oh, God. Nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to qualify. I don't like Didi Gregorius that much. I just, you know, he's fine. He's fine. If you drafted him, congratulations. You're beating me with him. We didn't talk about Sean Manaea, who threw a no-hitter. Brett, I thought he was going to be one of your guys because people forget, like, 2 years ago, we loved Sean Manaea. Like, this isn't like, wow, Sean Manaea. Like, we always thought he was pretty good. He just kind of never put it together last year and dealt with some stuff.
I own a Sean Manaea jersey. you know where I stand on Sean Manaea.
Yes. My last thing, there are two guys I think are interesting that are sort of, I think I'm going to write about him for the free agent watch tomorrow, but Franchi Cordero and Mac Williamson, a pair of NL West guys who Williamson, there's sort of the easy narrative of he changed his swing and now he's hitting fly balls, but he's hitting the crap out of the ball. And I think he's gotten a hit in every game this season, minor league, major league, you name it. So, yeah, he's been fantastic. So those are the last two guys. Brett, yeah, you're good. You don't have to. We're just doing the outro. So. And then Cordero is just endlessly fascinating from a power speed standpoint. So if you can still invest in him, I would suggest doing that. So
I'm just impressed that Mac Williamson can hit home runs without like the use of his neck. I don't know if you saw last night, he went literally head first into the wall in foul territory last night, and then hit a home run a couple innings later.
Mac Williamson.
It was really scary. Like, it was very, very scary looking.
He's endlessly fascinating. See, here's the thing. Brett mentioned this earlier, but like the access to information we have, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but it's difficult to write anything about anyone anymore almost, because like I'm excited to write about Cordero and Mac Williamson and Villanueva, but like there's a million things that have already been written about those guys now. Like, instantly we have this reams of data from StatCast, and it's like, all right, Frenchie Cordero hits the ball really hard, here's all the evidence. And it's like within a day, like Frenchie Cordero is the most popular player in baseball for everyone to write about. So I don't know, I struggle with that, where I'm like, well, there's already been 50 pieces about this guy, what am I gonna say about him? So I don't know, have you guys felt that way too? Because sometimes I struggle with that, where I'm like, man, I don't know what I can add to this conversation.
Well, you know, for me, you know, I know you read my stuff, George.
Oh, every week. Well,
thank you. I generally avoid that type of analysis, first of all, because I think some people do it, or many people do it better than I do.
Right.
But second of all, it's because of the point you made earlier, which is there's so much stuff that comes out that's reactive, and it reacts to like a week or a game. And I'm not saying there's not value in that, but often what happens is, you know, a couple weeks after that, we've moved on. I really like to look more at fantasy value and how to apply what's going on from that standpoint. So for me, it doesn't impact me so much, because I'm never going to go out and look at StatCast and look at SpinRate or look at all that and piece something together. That's just not the type of work I do.
Yeah. Like, I want to write about Mac Williamson, and of course, like, Jeff Sullivan today has written 1,000 words on him. So, like, Sullivan gets to everything first. God damn it.
Well, my bigger problem is when someone like Sam Miller or Grant Brisby, you know, who write better than I do, even though they're not doing that type of analysis, write about a player.
Yeah.
That's where I'm like, fuck. Like, I think I'm a good writer, but, like, you know, those guys are, like, off the chart. Or Meg Rowley's another one. Like, when they write about a player that I'm going to write about, even though it's a fantasy article, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty much not going to write about this guy now, because they're just off the charts.
Yeah, like Ben Lindbergh will do like league-wide context stuff, and you're like, god damn it, like that is just on a higher level of writing than I could ever put together. So yeah, it's difficult. So anyway, check out all of our work at Great Sell for Baseball Perspectives.
Yeah, right, we suck. Like, yeah, yeah. The people who are here who aren't here are better. And thanks everybody, good night.
This is Ben Flags Fly Forever. No, let's.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. If you don't want to read George or Mike's stuff, just read mine. Mine's great.
Yeah,
Mark is the best writer at BP. Yes.
All right, so let's do the outro, guys. So thank you all for listening to episode 167. I don't even know what the number is. Forget it. This has been our first show in a while, and I think it was fun. Overall, man, I need to redo this outro. What episode number was it? I wrote it down, and then I forgot where I wrote it. Thank you for listening to episode 167 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Cannot recommend it enough. Please go sign up today. That's where you can read all of our content. Mike has the Expert Fab Review. Is that the only thing you have every week, I think?
I do a freestyle every week. And actually, every month I do a valuation update. And the first one I do should be coming out not this week, but next week.
That's one of my favorite parts of the year. Every time we get a valuation update.
That's must read for everybody.
It's good stuff. So you can read Brett as well at BP. Mark and I co-author the Fantasy Hipsters column. We'll have a new one coming out on Monday. We have the Free Agent Watch coming out on Friday, so the day after this podcast goes live. Make sure you go check it out. Who you got for pitchers this week, Mark? Who you banding out?
I'm still narrowing it down. A lot of there could be a couple repeat repeat offenders in the free agent watch this week that no one is jumping on yet that have been very good.
Hyunjin Ryu has carried me in like two leagues, which is weird. I didn't see that one coming. Like, Andrew Triggs is the most frustrating player. Every time we write about him, he sucks. And then when we don't, he pitches well. Stupid. Can't stand Andrew Triggs. He's frustrating. All right, so that does it for us. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mark is at Hoodie and Tie. And I am at George Bissell. We're going to try and do this again next week, guys. We're going to try and get on a more regular schedule. Apologies, we've been off for a few weeks, but we're back like Kanye West, and we're going to be... another millennial thing there, wasn't it?
It's like a Twitter thing, and now he's suddenly into Trump. So
yeah, we're less controversial than Kanye. I will say that we're not looking to get into that that area of things, certainly. So we will be back hopefully next week, unless they canceled us. This outro was if it was disastrous enough, this might be the last.
Thanks for being on our last show, Mark.
Yeah.
Hey, always a pleasure.
At least we ended
It'd
our.
It'd be a run. Nice distinction to make it on the last episode of Flags Fly Forever.
Hey, Mark, you can't even say it. Hey, Mark, can you produce? You know, maybe George is the one getting
I might be. You never know.
Can't be that hard.
No, it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward. I forgot my line out now. Damn it. Oh, whatever. I had a good one. I had it all queued up, and then I forgot what it was. All right, so that's going to do it. Until our next show, so long, everybody.